Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Web Cave. I'm Dan Hummer. I'm here with the Italian Stallion himself, Bobbo.
What's going on, you scuzzy fucking fuckwad?
Not too much. Just hanging out. Another Monday. More superhero shit to talk about. How are you today, good sir?
I'm doing all right. It's real rainy. It's real shitty.
It's fall weather. It's beautiful.
Chilling out. Waiting for football. Got some bets on for the football game tonight.
Yep. Even though you're betting against my fucking team.
Yeah, fuck your team, dude.
You prick.
This is the first time in my life I'll ever think I'll side with the Cowboys.
Dude, I hope the Giants just fucking smash them. I really do. But, We're here to talk about, we did the top 10 comic book writers of all time last week. Today we're talking about the artists. We're talking about another talented profession and something that without them we wouldn't have anything, just like the writers. We need a good story, but we also need someone to bring it to life. So they're pretty important.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. We also have... we also have the latest episode of She-Hulk and House of the Dragon.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any additional like news or anything from this week or?
Not to my knowledge. I've been real busy this week, so I haven't had a lot of free time to do a whole lot of research and whatnot.
I feel you. I haven't seen too much on
I seen I a rumor. I'm not 100% positive. It's one of the pages I follow on Twitter. I'm not going to name the page by name. But I've seen that Zack Snyder is a potential candidate for the director of the Secret Wars movie, for Avengers. How would you feel if Zack Snyder did get casted as a director of an Avengers movie?
I'd feel betrayed. I'd feel stabbed in the back.
He can do Avengers?
Yeah. He can't do Marvel. First of all, I feel like that just doesn't work. I mean, the Secret Wars would work. But Marvel and Zack Snyder's tone are just the two opposite fucking things from each other. But, I mean, he's a great director. In all seriousness, I think he would probably knock it out of the park. I don't know how he would do with all Marvel characters, especially in a big event like that. I don't know.
Secret Wars, though, I could see Zack Snyder doing well with, like, an ultimate version of Spider-Man, Wolverine, Professor X, Thor, you know what I mean, Cyclops and shit like that. Like, honestly, if Zack Snyder's casted as fucking the director of Avengers Secret War, I guarantee you Henry Cavill is going to be fucking casted as, like, Cyclops or some shit.
Dude, he looks like he ate Cyclops.
I know.
Fucking protein powder. No, I mean, I wouldn't hate it. There is some, like, I don't need to see Tom Holland directed by... Tom Holland's Spider-Man does not need to be directed by Zack Snyder.
Tell me a Snydered out, slow motion, fucking dark, nostalgic styled movie with Spider-Man versus Venom wouldn't be badass.
I wouldn't care for it. I mean, I go see it, I'm not clamoring for that.
I think depending on the list and the storyline, I feel like Snyder could work for Marvel.
In ways, but I think of all care, I don't think Spider-Man should ever be touched by Zack Snyder, if you're asking my actual opinion. I personally wouldn't
want that either, but I don't know. It's like saying that, like, all comic book writers have worked for both Marvel and DC. I don't see why directors or actors can't do the same.
Yeah. No, I mean, he can go do whatever he wants, and I'm sure it'll be fine.
But who knows? I don't even know if that's, like, an official thing. It could be like a fan thing. It could have been real. I don't know. But it was from a page I usually follow that leaks things. That's usually typically ends up being true, but not all the time.
Yeah. All right. You want to briefly talk about the latest She-Hulk, number 6?
Yeah, I literally just got done watching it about 15, 20 minutes ago.
What was your thoughts?
They're not picking this show up at all. I mean, I'll give you, like, the end of the episode when they, with Mr. Immortal being there, that kind of gives you hints of, like, an immortal Hulk and Hulk becoming Maestro someday because he ages that long. It's a possibility. It was fucking, that company at the end taking the blood samples of Jen, trying to figure out, like, make other Hulks. It looks like it could lead to something interesting, but this little bridge and this little ride I'm on to get there is not a fun ride.
It's not a fun ride.
Did they finally get her blood?
They didn't show it, but in the end, on the lab screen, it showed Jennifer Walters in, like, a DNA sample, but they didn't show them taking it, so I'm not sure, like, if they picked up her pile of puke that was on the ground or some shit. I don't know.
Oh, okay. It looked like a brand new device was made that was strong enough to penetrate her skin.
Yeah, it did look like that, but I don't know.
I will say, I like Titania. I'm going to say I like Jameela Jamil. She's a very good actress.
I like her as a human being, but her role as this is fucking stupid.
Dude, I didn't think in that first episode that she was going to have, like, a big role.
I thought that was the end of her.
Yeah, I thought she was
like
done.
Like a year ago, Jameela Jamil was casted as the main series antagonist. She's, like, the main villain of the series.
I mean, I'm seeing that.
It's fucking stupid. It's fucking stupid, Peter.
I love the show.
I'm upset. It makes me upset.
All right. Well, let's talk about something good then. There was a couple story beats about this that was okay.
I give this episode like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm at like a consistent 6.
So far, the highlight of all of the episodes so far is She-Hulk. The highlight has been Daredevil's helmet in a fucking box.
Yeah. And that's not good when an Easter egg is your fucking... or a bit of foreshadowing.
Like, the highlight moment of the series has been Daredevil's fucking helmet sitting in a gift box. That's been the best part of the series.
Yeah, that's pretty ass. I mean, it's just kind of sad that they've kind of made the Hulk property just fucking a 30-minute
sitcom. They better fucking bring it back. Like, this shitty fucking journey we're on right now, all I got to say is they better fucking make up for it in the end. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. And I think it's hard with shows.
Fucking God, that's what they're doing.
Yeah. And it's hard with shows, too, with different directors and different writers and... But,
they need to have the same, like, 15 people in a room writing the scripts for every single storyline, for all the shows and all the movies. It needs to be the same people writing the same stories.
I agree. I agree. I think that's where they're fucking up with these Marvel shows.
Because you're seeing different visions.
Well, and the thing is I get it logistically, right? Because TV is a whole different thing. Like, the CW going away, a writer that I really enjoyed, he wrote Thor, his name's Zach Stentz. He was saying how bad of a thing it is. Even though, like, a lot of people think that Arrowverse got a little, you know,
convoluted
and not...
I liked some of it. I did like part of the Arrowverse.
But he was saying, like, something like that for, like, young writers and stuff is fucking huge. Because you have, like, 25 episodes to a season, and you have, like, 20 writers all working together or doing different episodes and kind of cutting their teeth. When you have, and on the contrary, you have like a Peacemaker that's written by one dude, James Gunn, directed by one dude, and no one else gets a cut of the pie, just him.
Right.
Which to me, like, I would say, let's go on that model for quality standpoint, because Peacemaker is one of the best superhero TV shows the last 5 years. But
look at Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige wrote an entire fucking universe, and look what happened in that entire universe. Every movie was fucking flames.
Yes. Well, he wrote the blueprint for the entire universe.
Exactly.
He didn't write,
like they had,
he didn't write any
other writers had to follow the blueprint. That's like that's not doesn't seem like that's what they're doing now. They're kind of just giving these writers the leeway and saying, here, go do this, and we're going to intertwine it somehow.
Yeah, there's a different writer credited on each episode.
It's not working.
No, it's not.
It's not working because they made fucking Doctor Strange this huge mystical fucking lord of the dark arts, and then now he's fucking, oh, yeah, Spider-Man, I'll race everybody's mind for you. Yeah, no problem. Oh, you want to do this, this, and that? Oh, yeah. By the way, this is going to cause issues, but I'm not going to tell you that.
Yeah. And they should at least, like with directors, you should keep a director to a character. Like, I like Sam Raimi, but Doctor Strange 2 was kind of vastly different of a vision than Doctor Strange 1, in my head at least.
I agree to a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, there's elements of that. I mean, there is elements of it that kind of, they do go kind of back and forth, but I think the 2 is way, to me, it's a different vision. You can tell it's Sam Raimi having fun compared to the first one.
I think
one
with high budget shit like this, there should be 2 people leading it, not just one. Like,
yeah.
Wynoff and D.B. Wise for the heads of the Game of Thrones show, that, like, they're the blueprint to show you, like, that's a prime example. If 2 people lead the show, they write and they direct it, it'll work.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm – if you do 2 people, that's fine, but have them on each one. Like, if you make a fucking – who's a fucking – like this like any type of – any character, any fucking Marvel character. You fucking do Miles Morales and you give him a movie. And you have one director on him. Keep that director for 3 movies. Don't give him a new one the next fucking – for the sequel. That makes no sense to me. Because that's putting 2 different – and the same thing with the writers. So it is a little weird what they're doing here. I do think this – the thing about this show is I think it hurts that it's in the MCU, to be honest. I think if it was loosely connected and was kind of an Elseworlds thing, it'd be a lot better. I think the fact that they're trying to continue like an epic saga like the MCU with, you know, a 30-minute comedy like this, it's just kind of baffling to me. Like, not everything has to be together. You know?
I agree. They should loosely tie it, but it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, like moving the plot forward for the MCU. It does not need to do that. And it really hasn't, but it seems like that's their intent, and I don't think it's going very well.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I got on it. I give it about a 6,
yeah,
too.
I would be very fond of it. Like I said, I'm waiting. I'm still open-minded about the show. I'm still waiting for the fucking to go over the tip of the mountain down the other side, man. I'm waiting for that moment.
Yeah. Hopefully it comes. All right. Are you ready to talk about something good?
Yeah, let's talk about that house. You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
I give this episode a 9 out of 10.
Okay. Why?
I really, really enjoyed the new actress playing Rhaenyra. I think her name's Emily Darcy or Emma Darcy or something like that.
Yeah.
I like her a lot playing Rhaenyra. Olivia Cook playing Alicent, not so much a fan of.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like the new Alicent. Like, I don't know.
I like the new Alicent more.
I don't. She's fucking.
What's
it's like the
well?
Older she got, the more childish her mentality got.
Well, yeah, she's supposed to be the worst, though. Like, I think the actress is doing fine. Like, I think she's portraying the fucking...
I'm more or less not the character, not the actress.
Yeah, I mean, she's a heel. I mean, she's not really supposed to be... Like, she's like that in the book, too. She's a bitch.
The episode had a lot. It had the comedy with the kids and the dragons and the little pig coming up the stairs with the fucking paper dragon wings taped to it and the bullying scene. Like, that was entertaining at times. And, like, I had the heartfelt moments with the kids training with the swords and the alleged father of Rhaenyra's children and Sir Criston Cole. and the children. That was a powerful scene. And my favorite scene of the episode was Lena Valeria, where she was in that same predicament as Viserys' first wife, where the child wouldn't come out, and Daemon had to be given that order to attempt to cut the child out, but the mother was going to die. I really liked the scene between her and the dragon when she walked up to the dragon and she said Dracarys, and the dragon wouldn't do it, and he was like, I'm not going to kill my mother, and then she kept saying Dracarys, and like, just the connection between the dragon and her was emotional.
At the end, the dragon knew that the mother was in pain. And
I know. That's why he burned her.
That's the only way of helping her, and that's why he did accept the fact he had a burn.
It shows very well that the dragons are among the smartest of all the beings in the realm. The dragons are probably a lot more smarter than humans.
I love the dragons in this show.
Yeah, that was my favorite scene in the episode. Damon's face when he fucking walks out there and sees that, and I was really sad. She was like my favorite character so far. I felt bad for her.
I liked it. We liked her all growing up. Like, she was like the actress playing Lena growing up. Like, she did a really good job. I wish they would have kept her around for like another episode or two, but
I mean, it had to happen though. But I thought it was great.
It was my favorite scene of the episode.
I will say, for somebody that's going to be, like, right now we're getting into the kind of the mother drama. Like, we got Rhaenyra and Allison just fucking going at each other's throats. They don't like each other. And that's kind of what's going to lead to the Civil War. And we've been talking about this since the show started. And that's what this season is building up to that. But Allison isn't going to be, like, the queen when Viserys dies. She's going to have an heir. And that heir's name is Aegon. And Aegon's going to be the one going against Rhaenyra and with his armies and stuff. And the first visual that we get of this young man is beaten off in a window.
Yeah, that was the most unnecessary fucking scene in the episode.
Showing him reading a book. There's no reason to show us that.
I mean, he's supposed to be young and not giving a fuck yet. I think it did a good job in that. Because he was like, I don't want to do that. I just want to fucking fight. Like, let her have the fucking, I don't care. And she's like, no, motherfucker, you got to run shit. So, I mean, it did its job, I think. I don't think it was the best scene of all time. We didn't need it. We didn't need him whacking off. But I wasn't mad at it either. I didn't, like, fucking smash my TV. But I thought it was kind of funny.
It was funny.
It was a really good
Targaryen.
Episode.
Letting the fucking dragon.
Fucking weird ass dude burning the father in the hands of the king.
Dude, Harrenhal can't catch a fucking break. That castle's been through some shit. Yeah, I liked the Hand of the King. I thought he was a really nice, you know, well-spoken man. And he got fucked. And his son got fucked, dude. Kristen Cole's an asshole right now.
I feel like the son lives. I feel like the father of Rhaenyra's child still alive.
Oh, he may be.
I don't think he died. I think he got out and realized his dad wasn't able to get out of the house, and he got out.
Maybe. Wasn't that his skeleton that was on the ground, though, or was that somebody else?
Yeah, but you don't know if that's really his.
You don't know that. You know that the Hand of the King died because he was trapped in the room and couldn't get it out, and couldn't get out of the room. The son, he definitely got out because he was just in the hallway. He could have got out. I guarantee you he's still alive.
He's burning alive right there while his dad was trying to knock down the door. Those flames were consuming him.
I'm pretty sure he's still alive. He was in knight's armor. He wasn't necessarily burned. He's surrounded in metal.
It looked like he was just wearing nighttime clothes.
Yeah, that's what I thought too, Danielle.
Like, they burnt me through the fire in while they were sleeping. He wouldn't be sleeping in his night gear.
I don't think he was asleep. The Hand of the King was in sleeping gear.
Hand of the King was asleep. He was coughing in his sleep.
Yeah, he was in bed.
He woke up to smoke.
It's like in their nightgowns.
I think the son got out. I can almost guarantee you we'll probably see him again because they're going to probably do the drama scene between him and Kristen Cole coming face-to-face again.
But it wasn't Kristen Cole that started the fire.
No.
No, I know, but his drama and his beef is with Kristen Cole, and that with the whole thing of the going on in the courtyard with the children, and then him being banished, and then to go back to Harrenhal, and then the fire happened. He's probably going to assume it was Kristen Cole.
I think he's dead. I don't think he's coming back. But I mean, I guess we'll see. And Kristen, like, yeah, you don't fuck it. I mean, he's like, yeah, dude, that's your son. Nah, nah. But I would have punched him in the face too. Fucking piece of shit. Not fucking, just because the three little kids have black hair and everyone's all up in fucking arms. And yeah. Aegon's a dickhead, fucking giving his brother a pig and shit. Aemon's kind of a pussy.
Aemon.
Okay, Aemon is a very, very sad child.
That's not Aemon from Thrones, right? This is way too before that.
Yeah, this is like Aemon the First.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because I know there was something with Aemon.
Yeah, there was an Aemon Targaryen in the regular show, and he was a maester. Maester Aemon.
And he gave up the crown for something, right? I forgot.
Yeah. I think he gave it up to become a maester.
Yeah.
He didn't want the crown, so he gave it to his brother.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
But it's going in some good places. Every episode's been entertaining so far. There's not really any filler. It's been a lot of setup and plot, but it's all been interesting. And people are kind of comparing that the gimpy dude, the dude with the cane, the little brother that fucking killed his head, his brother, and his dad. Yeah. There's Laris or something like that. They're trying to compare him to Little.
That's the man to the king's son. That's the fucking the father's brother.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's the youngest son. It's fucking Harwood. He's a Harwood, right?
He's strong.
He just killed his dad, and it possibly killed his brother.
They're trying to call him Littlefinger now.
He basically is.
Dude, he was nuts. And the queen's like, this isn't what he wanted. This isn't what I wanted. And he's like, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Fuck off. No, it was good. I did just look it up. And if they're going by the books, then both Strongs are going to stay dead. Harwin Strong died in Harrenhal like that in the books. I don't know if they're going to keep with it for the show or fucking bring him back.
I just have a feeling they're going to keep him alive in the show. I never trust an off-screen death. That's a rule I've always lived by watching shows. If someone allegedly died and they don't directly show it on screen, they're not dead.
They'll be back. Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
that's the rule I've always followed, and it always comes through.
No, yeah, absolutely. I like that we saw more dragons. That scene with her, Lena or whatever her name is, and Daemon together on the dragon, that was badass.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was a cool watch.
I like how Rhaenyra is back in Dragonstone now. She's like, yo, fuck this shit. I'm out.
Yeah, we're starting to...
see about it.
Yeah. And we're starting to... We're really building to this thing now because, like, she becomes, like, they call her the Princess of Dragonstone, or the Queen of Dragonstone, even, I think. So she's getting ready to fight. I like her and Laenor's relationship. All he wants to do is suck a little dick, fucking drink a little wine, and beat a little ass when he feels like it. And they're a good couple. And she's just fucking pumping out babies from another dude. What do we think about, old Hightower, the lady. I mean, I know you said you don't like how, you know, she got immature. Do you think that the character that we're seeing now is too ruthless compared to how we were seeing her in the early episodes, Bobby? Or do you think it's at least somewhat consistent?
And listen.
Yes.
It's definitely consistent. It's just, like, pathetic and weak the way they're portraying her.
She's being a bitch, dude. And the first thing I ever found.
She's like, and like, she's not like a villain. I'm like, oh shit, that's like, fuck. She's a good villain. She's like annoying to me. She's not like a. She doesn't seem like a problem. She's just annoying.
I think she's gonna be a problem. She's like Serlana,
no,
or maybe one day one will look like you. It's like, bitch. It's like they just had the baby.
She's a jealous little woman.
She is. The king just wants everybody to get along. He's like, I'm fucking dying, dude. Can we all just fucking have peace?
And I like when he was sitting there saying, like, he was, like, throwing his old man fuss because Alicent was putting pillows and shit and tucking him into the blanket. And he's out of these fucking pillows.
Yeah.
I don't need the blanket.
I don't need this fucking blanket. And she's still tucking him in with it. And he's just like, like, the king, the actor playing the king is doing an excellent fucking job.
I know. I like the actor. He is doing a good job.
He is doing pretty good. Another funny line I liked is from the maester. When we were, it was very low-key, but during that whole, like, argument when they're talking about what to do with the stepstones and stuff and when Rhaenyra makes her big offer, like, before that, when they transition from one topic to the stepstones, the maester's so fucking old that he's still talking about the other topic, and the one guy's just like, no, like, we moved on. I just thought that was pretty funny.
And then when he brought it up, and then the king was like, oh, these blessed fucking stepstones.
Yeah, and this old fuck's like talking about the other shit. He's like, no, dude, we're on this other thing now. Fucking keep up. It was funny. I'm liking it a lot. I like the Hightower girl. I think the actress is doing a great job. And I like Rhaenyra. I don't have a problem with the age up whatsoever, which I thought I was going to, because I thought the girl that was playing Rhaenyra was fucking knocking it out of the park. And I was wondering why they didn't just do CGI or something to age her up.
Yeah, I think it's only 10 years.
I think the reason why they changed her is because she had three children and the age up. That little girl that was playing Rhaenyra before does not look like a girl who just gave birth to three children.
Yeah, I can see that. You're not wrong, man.
She looks like she's 14, bro. She doesn't look like she's 26 that has two sons that are 8 and 6 and then another one that she just gave birth to.
You just CGI her face and make her look like an aged mother. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, but the whole body and her posture and everything, like that, you can't CGI that.
You can make her taller. Why the fuck not? You can do anything.
Yeah, but her posture and shit, she doesn't sound or look like an older woman. She's like the girl that was playing Rhaenyra. She looks like a child. That's
Dude,
why she played the child
fucking
version of
Infinity War. I'm convinced you can do anything. If you can have fucking Thanos and shit, I think you can make this bitch a little taller.
We're talking about shit that's like way back in like ancient times compared to Marvel and shit where you're CGI and futuristic spaceship. It's going to look odd as fuck with a human being CGI'd the fuck out because of their posture and they don't look the right age. It would look stupid. It would look like a sore thumb out in the middle of nowhere.
If it's done wrong. No, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I do a little bit, but I think this episode was really good. I would agree with your 9. It has a little bit of everything. It's got the political drama mostly. Like, it's got the early seasons of Thrones political drama that's really intriguing. It's not just all battles and fucking, and it's really a nice, complete show so far, and I'm really digging it. It's one of the best shows on TV, so.
So far, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
I've seen a report that Rhaenyra might get a third actress.
But how old are they going to fucking make her? She doesn't... Well,
I think when they do the age jump for when Aegon's older, like when he becomes an adult with the rumors of Henry Cavill and Elizabeth Olsen coming in, Henry's going to be older Aegon and Elizabeth's going to be even older Rhaenyra.
Henry Cavill's coming in?
It's a possibility.
How the fuck is he? You're gonna take that frail little fuck, and then just fucking
pump like
him with steroids
right now, bro. When he grows up to a grown ass man, like yeah, dude, he can get huge.
Not that fucking huge. I don't think Henry Cavill should be in the Game of Thrones universe. They don't have creatine.
You're telling me John Cena, when how big and jacked that man is, he looked like that at 12?
Yeah. No, he didn't look like that. Obviously not, but they don't have fucking, they don't have the means to get that jacked in this time period. You need fucking protein. You might even need illegal fucking substances.
I have two motherfuckers that completely dethrone your claim.
The mountain was more fat than anything, so what's your second one?
That man was a behemoth, and the Hound, too. I mean, men were huge.
Yeah, the Hound wasn't jacked, dude. He wasn't Henry Cavill.
That dude was jacked, and he was huge.
None of the people you're naming are Henry Cavill jacked, except for the Mountain. But the Mountain's like a whole different fucking level.
Dude, the Mountain could eat 5 Henry Cavills for breakfast.
I got Henry Cavill knocking him out in a boxing match.
I mean, he wasn't called the Mountain for no reason at all. He was fucking huge.
I know. Like, dude, Henry,
the other guy's called Super
Cavill, bro. Henry Cavill weighs like 250 of pure muscle. The Mountain is pushing like 450, close to 500. The man is a literal mountain with legs on it.
The Mountain's a fucking pussy. And I don't think, I mean, Aegon's never fucking swole, okay? I've seen fucking
pictures.
He's
not going to get that fit just jacking off in the window.
He's going to start lifting a little more than his cock.
He's going to show you up, Sharon. He's going to come up and he's like, look how fucking swollen I am.
He better not. I'll knock that little fucker out. Fucking put the moves in my head. You got
but
any
I
more
know
on
another... I know the children are going to be aged up. Like, Aemon's going to be aged up, and Aegon's going to be aged up before the end of the season.
Yeah.
We're going to get him, like, a few years older.
I hope Kristen Cole gets fucking evaporated.
Fucking
yeah, dude. That's why I hope that dude's still alive, because I want him to kill Kristen Cole.
He's not going to, though. I really think he's dead. But Kristen Cole's a piece of shit. I hope somebody fucks him up. I hope Damon fucks him up. I like how, like,
yeah,
did you watch next on the episode? Because it seems like shit's really going down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like shit's going down.
I think we're going to get our first little fight sequence battle thing.
And I like that they had, like, they had Laenor and Damon and the dad, the Valyrian dad. I forgot his name. But from the first couple episodes, yeah, whatever. Laenor's dad, and they're all on like one side together, and it's like, oh shit, we're really getting, because that's like that side of that civil war, and now and then we got Aegon and Alicent and Crispin and all that shit. But yeah, it's getting really good. So
it's exciting.
It is. I love it.
We'll see.
You
want to
get in a little bit drawing over here?
Drawing?
Yeah, a little bit of that comic book illustration, dog.
The meat and potatoes in tonight's episode.
The meat and fucking potatoes. You fuck potatoes.
Every once in a while. Every once in a while, we've been known to caress a potato. Top 10 comic book artists of all time.
Hell yes, son.
We did write, like I said earlier, we did writers last week. None of that, you can write a script all fucking day. It ain't going to mean shit unless you got somebody that can make it pop on page. The art is the most important part of the book. Even any writer will tell you that. Without the art, if the art sucks, you can have the best story of all time. The art sucks, no one's going to fucking read it. They're going to fucking rip it apart and use it as rolling paper. They don't give a fuck. So you need an artist. You can have a shitty story with great art, and it sells really well. I've seen it. You can't really do a bad story with fucking great art, or with terrible art. It won't work. So
well,
that's just a little...
It won't fucking work, then?
No, it won't work. It'll suck.
It won't fucking work, then?
It won't work. It would be terrible. Let's go in our number 10, and we'll start with you.
Let's start fucking with me. All right. I'm going to do a new wave guy, newer art, modern art, doesn't draw on paper, draws digital art. And his name is David Marquez.
Okay.
Personally, of all the new wave writer or illustrators, he is my favorite of like 2010 till today. I do like David Marquez a lot. All of his work, like 90% of Brian Michael Bendis' story, David Marquez drew it.
Yeah.
Even with Bendis' work with Marvel, like David Marquez drew it. When Bendis came over to DC and started doing his work with DC, Marquez drew it, most of it.
Yeah.
I really like it. I really like the new style art that he does. It's really smooth. It's really clean. He does good, like, definition on the way the bodies of the characters look. He does a really good job.
Yeah, he did Civil War too, didn't he?
I'm
pretty sure.
Don't remember. I could have.
Bendis wrote it, so I'm going to go with I'm pretty sure.
Then
I'm pretty sure it was him, I guess. And the art on that book's fucking great. He draws a fantastic Spider-Man. His ultimate Spider-Man is fucking beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Great New Age artist. I mean, he just... It's like lifelike now. It's crazy how far arts came to where it was. Like, I'm sure we're both going to have a lot of trailblazers on our list and guys that really paved the way. But the shit that's going on right now is fucking incredible how good some of it is. And he's one of the bigger contributors, so.
That's not a bad pick. All right. I'm going with a fucking newer name myself. And I'm going with my homie Leo Max. One name, because we're real ones. Real ones go by one name. Right now, he's doing the Rogue series with Joshua Williamson, your boy. And it might be one of the prettiest looking things I've ever fucking put my eyes at. That and a couple pairs of nice asses. Probably in the top three right there. Beautiful. Beautiful art. He can take any story, any like minor character. I like him because he does some of the more minor characters, and he just makes them fucking pop. And he's still going right now. He's not newer, but he's still got a lot left in the tank for sure. He's going to be making comics for a long time, so I'm excited. From what we've got from him, I really enjoy. And, you know, it's one of those, if I see him on a book, I'm more inclined to buy it, so.
Well, Leo Max.
That's one word?
Yeah. He's doing this horror series, too, called Basket Full of Heads, and it's really good.
Because it sounds like it's Leo Max.
It's all, like, one word in all caps. L-E-O-M-A-C-S.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Hell yeah. All righty. You ready for my number nine?
Yes, I am.
Somebody that I brought up in our comic book writers episode who also happens to be an illustrator, and that would be Mr. Todd McFarlane.
I mean, his Spawn, his Venom, yeah. The dude's a fucking
wrote Venom. He co-created Venom. He's the first person to ever draw Venom on paper. That's a huge attribute. And his Ultimate Spider-Man series was absolutely fantastic. And he drew it. And the Spider-Man series that he wrote is one of the best-selling Spider-Man series of all time. His Spawn drawings are absolutely incredible. When he get that short spell, when he got to draw Batman and do Batman shit, that was really good. When he did the Batman and Spawn crossover, that was fucking fantastic.
Yeah. No. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I agree with that pick.
Absolutely. Just the sole fact that he's the person who created Venom and is the first person to draw Venom and to see where Venom has gone to today is the reason why he's definitely in this top 10.
And he just, like, I mean, he belongs to be there. I, like, he's done so many things. Like, the fact that he's, like, McFarlane Toys is one of the biggest toy companies right now. He designs all the toys. You got to write that down on paper and draw that and shit to go off it. I'm pretty sure, I don't know for sure, I'd actually have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure that he did the animation for the Spawn show, too. But I don't know for sure, so I might be, I don't want to put that as, like, fact. But he's fucking good, man. His Venom, Spawn is, like, the best, like, most known character outside of Marvel and DC. What he's done with Image and stuff, and, like, he draws Batman really good. But, I mean, obviously his claim to fame is his Venom. But, like, he draws Spider-Man really good. McFarlane's just a fucking beast, dude.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Next up for me,
I went with somebody that our boy's actually going to be working with, our boy McFarlane, on the Batman Spawn book. This guy that's going to be drawing it, because McFarlane's just writing, I believe, the man that's going to be drawing it is Greg Capullo, who, if you don't know him, you probably should. One of the best, like, 90s and 2000s artists in DC. He's done some Marvel stuff, too, but this guy is fucking amazing. He's worked with guys like Jeff Loeb, and his Batman is something he's really known for, and his stuff on Detective Comics, and he did Metal. So if you really like the art style, Greg Capullo, I said Jeff Loeb, my bad, but him and Scott Snyder, he's Scott Snyder's boy. He's basically like how you said Bendis with Marquez. That's how Snyder and Capullo are. And them on Metal was – Metal's not my favorite story of all time, but it is some of my favorite art. And he's the sole reason for that. So
him, I like Capullo.
Absolutely. And him and McFarlane are going to be working together, which is fucking cool. He just – like, he does the dark shit really well, so.
I like him.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. All right.
My number eight is mainly a Marvel artist. He has worked for DC, but not very much. His name is Mike Deodato Jr. More of a late 90s, mid-2000s, early 2010s writer. He is, I think the last time he did something was in, like, 2018, which was an Infinity Countdown, and he did some Invincible Iron Man in the mid-2010s. But Mike Deodato, he did a lot of Wonder Woman stuff when he was, that's where he started out, was in DC, and he did some Wonder Woman stuff. And then he came and started doing Avengers and the Dark and New Avengers. He did a lot of Spider-Man. He was a penciler for the Mighty Thor in the early 2000s for a little while. I really like his art. Like, I like the mid-2000s, 2010s Marvel artwork comics. I think that's when Marvel art really shined, and he did a lot of the bigger events in the 2000s with the Avengers and the New Avengers and the Dark Avengers and the Infinity Wars series.
He draws Spider-Man really, really cool. He, like, draws him perfectly with his muscle tone, and he, like, emphasizes how limber he is.
That's cool.
Dude is a beast. Really big in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah, he even did some Star Wars stuff, I believe. He did some penciling for Star Wars, and actually he did a comic book adaption for Beauty and the Beast television series in the early 90s.
He even draws She-Hulk.
Yeah, his big ones that I remember that I wrote down for my notes for this were the Avengers and Dark Avengers and She-Hulk, the Incredible Hulk series, the Amazing Spider-Man, and Doctor Strange.
Badass. Bad fucking ass, dude.
100%.
No, dude's a legend. I mean, everybody on this list is going to be a legend. We if you we're talking, because there's so much more than 10 of the best comic book. There's so many good comic book artists out there to choose from. So when you get to the top 10, I don't think there's really any duds. My number 7, right. was that your 7 or 8?
8.
Okay. My number 8, I might cause a little controversy for this, but I went with a man named Dan Mora. He does DC now a little bit. He's known for his Buffy the Vampire Slayer comics. Now, before I fucking start, before you start talking shit, those comics have really good fucking art in them. Even if you're not a fan of Buffy or the Buffyverse or any of that stuff, even though that's one of Joss Whedon's creations, one of the good ones, not the shitty ones. And
it's almost anime. He is almost like an anime artist, but it's like a modern twist with it.
Absolutely. Who, Dan Mora?
Yeah.
I agree. Yes, he does. It's sort of anime, but it's like it does have that American style too. And he's working on the I completely agree. The Buffy shit's really good. He's doing this World's Finest series. Mark Waid's writing it right now. It's Batman Superman. It's kind of like a return to form for them. And Mora's doing the art, and it's just fucking beautiful, dude. It's so good. It's so pretty to look at. It's just fucking the battle scenes are so emphasized and fucking like the way he draws fire and shit exploding. The dude's just... Dude's a fucking genius when it comes to that shit. And, he's killing it right now. So I had to put him in there.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, my next one is somebody who definitely deserves a lot of credit, who you probably know very well, and his name is Dan Jurgens.
Yes.
Somebody who did a lot of penciling and writing for Nightwing, the one who wrote and created Doomsday and Booster Gold. He did some Batman. He was a big writer, illustrator for the Green Arrow series. I mean, you create Booster Gold, and then you do Doomsday. I mean, that's quite the resume.
I mean, he did fucking Death of Superman. It's one of the biggest stories of all time. And the art of that book holds up extremely well for taking place in 1992. And he's a big reason to thank for it. Because he didn't only create... He created Booster, he created Doomsday, and he created Cyborg Superman, which is fucking really cool. He's done a little writing, too, but he really is... He's an artist. He did the 52 series after... was it Infinite? Yeah, after Infinite Crisis, which was, highly acclaimed. And that was a weekly series. So the dude grinds still.
He was a writer on the Zero Hour series as well.
Yes. And that, even though, I mean, we're getting the sequel to Infinity Crisis on Infinite Earths now, but that was actually the sequel. It was the second event. He worked on that all the way back in the late 80s, or was that already early 90s?
Early 90s.
Yeah. But his Superman, he draws a damn good Superman. Dan Jurgens is the man. I forgot to put him on my list.
He should be in the comics kind of Superman.
I agree with you. I agree with that statement. The dude's a fucking legend, man. Real good pick. All right. My number 7. I went with a young man that's killing it nowadays, Dustin Nguyen. He's fucking out here. I just finished it, actually. Robin and Batman, which is kind of an old origin take on Dick Grayson and Bruce. And, Dick is a young kid. He's like 10 in the series. Dustin's artwork is incredible. I'm actually going to show you a couple pages after this, Sharon. Because it's so fun. Like, he does kind of like an ink blotty type thing, but not really. It's so weird to describe his art. It only works for specific shit, and it's like a very specific style. But it's a style that I'm really inclined to, and I really enjoy. And yeah, he's one of the best modern artists. So
I had to throw him in there.
Number six, Aroni, big fella.
Yes, sir.
All right. Somebody who was real big in the 90s and the 2000s. Some people might know him by name, but most people who read DC Comics have definitely seen his artwork. His name is Alex Ross, the illustrator behind the Kingdom Come series.
Yeah. This is another one that it's like his own style. Like, no one can draw like Alex Ross. It's great. His, like, super realistic, like, vision for, like, his Superman looks like it's a real fucking dude. Like, that dude is nuts. I don't know how he does it. His art is next level.
It is, and he did the re-penciling of the Crisis on Infinite Earths reprints with George Perez.
His detail is awesome.
Yeah, and this is a dude that was drawing like that in the early 90s. He was drawing comic books with his like hyper-realism with his art.
Yeah, Kingdom Come.
Definitely a big guy. He drew a lot of Batman, Captain Atom.
He draws Batwoman, too, and she looks bad fucking ass.
He does Shazam and Wonder Woman as well. And he does some Justice League and some JSA shit and Superman.
No, absolutely. I mean, Kingdom Come is
actually,
one of the...
Speaking of, we talked about it earlier, he actually did an illustration for a Game of Thrones comic issue.
You remember which issue? Or
it was Game of Thrones number 1 and 2 in 2011. Underneath the Dynamite Entertainment Publishing Company.
Yeah, I've read a few of those Game of Thrones books. They're good, but
Alex Ross drew it.
Yeah, dude's nasty. His hyper realistic version of character, no one can emulate it, and people have tried, and it just doesn't turn out as good. The Kingdom Come is known as probably one of the best drawn things ever, and that's all him. So. Alex Ross is nasty. He very incredible artist.
Absolutely.
All right. I got another legend I'm throwing in the fucking mix here. Another fucking killer. I went with John Byrne. Done a lot of Marvel. A lot of Marvel, a lot of DC, a lot of Amazing Spider-Man, Avengers, Cap. He did some Hulk, did some Iron Fist, did probably my favorite version of Hawkman, which, it's hard to do. he worked with Jack Kirby on his Fourth World later on. I think it was, pretty sure it was like the reboot of it. His Superman,
probably he's best known for his Superman and reinventing The Man of Steel in 1986 after Crisis on Infinite Earth. John Byrne, he wrote it and drew it, and John Byrne's Man of Steel is the Superman we know and love today and helped revitalize the character for the new age post-crisis. So what this guy's done for the industry and for one of my favorite characters in particular is just, you can't thank him enough. So I had to throw him on there. His work with Superman in the late 80s is just fucking incredible. And he kept it going for a very long time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
All right. My number 5 is one of your favorite writers of all time, if not your favorite writer of all time.
Artist.
Kareem Jesus, Mr. Jim Lee.
Yeah. You're trifling for putting him at 5. I want to say something for later on when he's on my list. So you go ahead. What do you think about Jim Lee?
Yeah, you just save your comments. You just don't comment on this one. Save yours for your turn.
Okay.
I like Jim Lee a lot. His All-Star Batman and Robin and the Boy Wonder series, the way he drew that was absolutely fantastic. His Superman issue that he did for Tomorrow that he did with Brian Azzarello, that's one of my favorite Superman storylines and honestly one of my favorite DC forms of artwork. And the way that Jim Lee drew Batman is like one of the ways that most people today visualize Batman on a comic book page when people think of Batman is you think of Jim Lee's drawing. And his work with the X-Men and Iron Man and all his Marvel, Jim Lee drew so many covers for Marvel. It's ridiculous. His X-Men shit that he did was really good.
Fucking made the X-Men.
Is he with DC now?
Yeah, he's like head of DC.
I was going to say, isn't he like head of creative? He was on that DC con we saw, right?
Yeah, the fandom.
Judging fan art and stuff.
Yeah.
He's head of DC right now, or the publication at least. He's in charge of the comics.
Hell yeah.
He's not editor-in-chief, though. I forgot what his role is. But yeah, he's the man. I will talk about him more later. But I agree with everything you just said.
We're at five?
All right, who's number five?
We're at five?
Now, we're
yes,
going to start...
Sir.
We're going to start getting to where we have similar ones. But, and I'm,
and people are going to be mad at me that I have him this high, or this low, I would say.
I went with the King, Jack Kirby. We talked
I'm not
about
going
him
to speak because I have him higher on my list later.
Yes. I think we probably have very similar Final Fives. But Jack Kirby made, like, everything we know and love today. And his art style was so fucking cutting edge for the 70s, for the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and he never lost a fucking beat. He would draw for other people anonymously just to help. There's shit that he's drawn that you don't even fucking know. This is the creator of Darkseid. This is the dude that made the Fantastic Four and all the beautiful art that came with that. And he was higher up on my writer's list, which is really... kind of a blunder on my part because anybody you talk to in comic books will tell you that he was a better artist than he was writer. And I'm inclined to agree. I do like his writing, but it's kind of, it doesn't age as well as some other stuff. Cause you know, lingo's different and just shit was different in the 70s, but his art surprisingly does. You go back and read that first fucking, Fourth World thing. With him and Orion and Darkseid, that first New God series, it fucking looks beautiful, dude. It looks like it could have been drawn in the 90s. And that's like 10, 15 years before that. So this man, he helped create comic books as we know and love them today, or at least the superhero genre. But he also, like, he fucking made it happen. Like, we don't know. Does Stan Lee's visions come to life without him and Ditko? We don't know. Lee had the ideas, but he couldn't draw to save his dick as much as the other two. He was the writer guy. He was the idea guy. But without fucking Ditko and Kirby, maybe those fucking ideas never even get put to the page. And we're not having a conversation right now. So Jack Kirby is very important to comics and the comic industry as a whole. So for writing, creating, and art, I think he's one of the best like overall to be in there, like at everything. He did
the king. He's not the king of writing. He's not the king of illustrating. He's the overall king of comics.
He's King Kirby, and they don't call him that for no reason. That's an actual name. People call him King Kirby. There's a reason
yep.
why. So that's my number five. You got your four?
Yeah, I'm not going to speak on Kirby because I do have him higher on my list. Not too much higher. So I'm going to get to him shortly for my part of my take on Mr. King Kirby.
Okay.
But what I'm going to do here for my number four is I'm going to give you another absolute legend. And his name is Neil Adams.
I like his art too.
for his work with Batman and Deadman.
Yeah, he is my number four. So I'll just talk about
cool. He's worked with Batman, he's worked with Deadman, the JLA, the Spectre, and Superman, and all his Avengers work, and his new and young Avengers, and Thor and X-Men series. Like, Neil Adams is kind of everywhere, and his work is very consistent. It's very, very well. He's another one of those dudes who, when he came out in the early 70s, his artwork was revitalizing. It was fantastic. And this is a dude who still drew in like 2018. And his artworks never skipped a beat over a 40-year period.
To a point, I think there are arguments that can be made that say it very much did skip a couple beats with older age, which is fine. I mean, everyone's going to get worse at their craft the older they get. But the influence that this man has cannot be understated. He could easily be anyone's number one. RIP, by the way, he just passed. Him and Perez just passed. And But those two just passed recently. And those are two of the foundations. And him especially, Jim Lee, Frank Miller, we put Frank Miller on he was on my writer's list. Also a very good artist. He drew the Dark Knight Returns and stuff. They're both influenced and proteges of Neil Adams. Jim Lee's one of the greatest comic book artists right now and like previously too, these last couple decades, or this decade and the one before that. And he was under the tutelage of Neil Adams. Neil Adams, and he was working way before, I think he was working like the 60s, I'm pretty sure. He was doing shit for Archie on the fly, and he started, and he did some stuff in DC, too. He started, like, really
I looked it up earlier. It was, like, in the from, like, 1967 to the late 70s, like, Action Comics, like, 356 through, like, 485 or 490 or something like that. Like, Neil Adams did all the covers for all of those comics.
Yes. He was the guy.
So that's
and I don't know if we talked about Denny O'Neil last week, but him and Denny O'Neil were the perfect fucking team to make Batman into Batman again. Because this is around the time in the 70s where you have the 1966 show with Adam West, and you have a very corny Batman, and Batman and Robin just kind of having fun and, you know, not being that dark Batman we know today. Well, Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams took the character and fucking completely spun him back to where he was. He introduced those two. He was the first man to draw Ra's al Ghul. And Ra's al Ghul is fucking icon today. His work on Detective Comics and Batman with Denny O'Neil is one of the most infamous runs of all time. And he's got the infamous cover of he did the Green Arrow, Green Lantern series, Hard Traveling Heroes. And he's got the infamous cover of Speedy, also known as the Red Arrow, also known as Arsenal, doing heroin, and fucking Green Lantern go, "Your ward's a junkie." That like he made that cover, and that's one of the greatest comic book covers of all time.
And another thing that a lot of people don't know is Neil Adams and Jack Kirby did work together as the ink and penciler for the Superman's Pale Jimmy Olsen series in the 60s and 70s. Like Jack Kirby and Neil Adams, they did all of the artwork for that entire limited series. That ran like 6 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Neil Adams is the fucking goat. There's a 5-hour omnibus type podcast with him and Kevin Smith that I implore anybody that doesn't know him to listen to if you want to get more familiar. It's just him fucking telling stories for 5 hours, and it's incredible. That dude, he killed it. He's had a couple, like Batman Odyssey in like 2011, I think. That wasn't that. He wrote that, and that was like, it was really weird. But all his older shit from Batman on, straight incredible. He is truly one of the best comic book artists of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the first one like at conventions too, selling his like sketches and shit for like $1,000. Really, he's like one of the bigger, like, people's rights artists in comics. Like, he was, like, big on getting everybody paid and getting everybody credits and shit. So he's done a lot more than even we know.
He just, Neil Adams did a lot of the, like, the Batman volume, like, the fucking 300-page books. Like, Neil Adams drew a lot of those, too.
Absolutely. That was both our number four. Who's your number three?
My number three is the King, Jack Kirby.
Okay. And well, I already covered him.
He said with his work with the creating Darkseid and Orion and the New Gods, and his creation of Commandy and the Black Panther and co-creating Captain America and illustrating the Marvel's Eternals and Silver Surfer and the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. Like, 90% of the characters in both the DC and Marvel that we love today came from the hands of Jack Kirby.
Yes.
Whether it was actually writing and creating the character as a whole, or the, being the first person to draw them, or like revitalizing the visual of the character because of the way he drew them.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's the fucking man. I don't know what else I can say about him. He's he's one of the godfathers of comic books, so, especially Marvel.
Who's your number two?
No, this is three now. You just went three. I go after.
Oh, yeah, who's your three? My bad.
Fucking up the order here. No. I went with more of an underrated pick. I went with Alan Davis. Don't know if you've heard of him. He did the mini series JLA The Nail, which is like an Elseworlds story, and it's the Justice League without Superman, and it's one of my favorite stories. And the art in that is pretty incredible. But he's mostly known for his Marvel stuff, with his run on Avengers being very esteemed. He did stuff with the Fantastic Four, especially Fantastic Four The End, the miniseries, which is another one of my favorites. He did some Thanos stuff, and Thanos' art has always looked cool. So he's the guy. He did another Nail when they went back to that, but that wasn't as good. The art was still good. But, yeah, he's underrated and doesn't get the credit that he should get. He's one of the better artists that no one talks about, so I had to throw him on here.
Hell yeah, man.
All right, brother, who's your number two?
Brother. Hell yeah, brother. Anyway.
Yeah, just while you're fucking channeling Hulk Hogan over there.
Marvel legend, Steve Ditko.
Yeah, I mean, he's right there with Kirby, right? Except
that's
he's
why he's my number two. This is the reason why I put Steve Ditko over Jack Kirby. Yeah, Jack Kirby created the Darkseid and the Orion and the New Gods. And, yeah, he created Commandy and Black Panther and, like, helped create the Fantastic Four and Cap. But Steve Ditko created fucking Spider-Man. Steve Ditko co-created Doctor fucking Strange. And he created Captain Atom. And he created The Question. Like, Steve Ditko is an absolute legend. Somebody who is one of the first people, if not the first person, to draw Spider-Man on paper. Arguably the second biggest superhero the world has ever seen, right beside Superman.
Yeah.
Creating Doctor Strange and, like, the kind of character Doctor Strange has become today, like, that's a huge moment. One of the first people to draw Captain America, like, Steve, in my honest opinion, Stan Lee could have still made it and still been who Stan Lee was today without Jack Kirby, but he would not have been able to become who he is today without Steve Ditko. In my personal opinion, Steve Ditko is the one to thank for Stan Lee's success and, like, the platform that Stan Lee got to. It's because of Steve.
Well, he stuck around for longer, too, but yeah. I don't disagree with you. And then what he did at
Charlton Comics before they went away, he worked on Blue Beetle too. And
Ditko's the reason why Blue Beetle is like famous now, because he revamped his visuals, and like because nobody had, the Blue Beetle fell off, and he brought Blue Beetle back by the way he drew him.
He also, I mean, he, like you said, Captain Atom, his, the question a lot, we don't talk about him that much on this show. The question is a lot of people's like favorite comic book character, really fucking underrated character that has a cult fan base. And that all started with Steve Ditko. And, so he's the fucking man.
Those three really are the godfathers.
What's up?
Like Doctor Strange, like that's a huge dude. The reason why Doctor Strange's name is Stephen Strange, his name is Stephen because of Steve Ditko. Like that's the reason why Strange's name is Stephen.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's one of those, like,
even looking at his old art, it looks better than some stuff now. It's one of those. I wouldn't go that far because we've gotten pretty advanced, but his shit still holds up. Him and Kirby shit still holds up. And like you said, he created Spider-Man. What other claim to fame do you need?
Yeah, like you literally drew the second biggest, if not tied to be the greatest hero of all time alongside with Superman. Like, you can't get much better than that. Like, he's one of the first people to draw the Hulk. Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Captain America, the Fantastic Four, like Marvel, Marvel Comics would not exist without this man and Stan Lee.
All right, my number two,
I'm going to go with another man that had passed away this year earlier in June, RIP to him. We had three legendary fucking great writers all pass away around the same time, which is very sad. I went with Tim Sale. This guy has his own distinct style, and I really credit him for making me fall in love with Batman stories. We talked about Jeff Loeb last week. This was his boy. So he did the Long Halloween. You've seen the Long Halloween movie and that art style that's in. That's based off the book. They kind of used the art style from the book in that. And you see how fucking slick and cool that is. You watch that movie. And really cool, slick. So that's how Batman should be drawn, in my eyes. I don't think Batman should be drawn by anybody else but Tim Sale. He's just fucking so like effortlessly perfect, and he's got that dark noir type vision down so well. He did the Dark Victory, which brings Robin, and it's an incredible sequel to that story. Tim Sale's Batman is just. When you talk about one of the most profitable comic book characters of all time, it's either between your boy with the webs and Batman. And one of the best – so the best people to draw either two of those characters are probably going to be the best artists. And Tim Sale kind of takes the cake for drawing Batman. So to me, he's one of the greatest artists of all time. He did Daredevil.
I agree for the most part. The only thing that you said I don't agree with is he should be the only person that draws Batman. I don't agree with that. He is the best person to draw Batman.
Yes.
But I really enjoyed, like, Jim Lee and Frank Miller's drawings of him. And, like, I even really like David Marquez's modern digital art drawings of Batman. Like, I even, in the Facebook podcast group, which a lot of you people need to still continue to join, I posted a picture in there of Superman and Batman next to each other that David Marquez drew, and it's one of, if not my favorite picture of them two standing next to each other.
He's got a good Batman. He does have a good Batman.
But he's not the best Batman. I don't think Tim Sale should be the only person. That was an over-exaggeration. But to me, my opinion, he draws the greatest Batman there is. And his Superman for All Seasons is a really good story, too, and he does the art on that. His Superman looks kind of cool, too. A little weird, but cool look for Superman. So,
right.
I go Tim Sale. Who is your number one? Drum roll.
My number one In my opinion, I hope after I say this statement, the world starts to follow it. Like I said earlier in the episode, Jack Kirby is the king of comics. He's not the king of illustration. He's not the king of writing. He's the overall king of comic books. My number one pick is the king of comic book illustration, and he has recently passed in the last year, and his name is George Perez.
Yeah.
I mean, the king of comic book illustration, the man who has brought us Crisis on Infinite Earths, one of the most biggest comic book events in superhero comic history, whether it's DC or Marvel. He brought us the Teen Titans. He brought us Wonder Woman and Superman. He drew the Infinity Gauntlet series for Marvel, which all of us just got to see in a live-action movie series over the last 12, 14 years with the Thanos thing. George Perez drew that way back in the 90s. He also drew regular Avengers, and he did Hulk and Fantastic Four. Like, George Perez probably has, like, the biggest footprint in comic book art in history.
I don't disagree. I purposely didn't put him on my list because I knew he was on yours. But he fucking... He's like the first like event artist. Like, he was the guy that put all those fucking characters on page and made it all look cool and not too like you knew, you can see everyone, you know who everyone is, you can fucking tell Blue Beetle from Batman, from Superman, from all these other people. And he put like hundreds of heroes on a page together. I talked about Marv Wolfman last week, his partner. He was George Perez. He probably deserves to be called the king or the greatest of all time, the GOAT, whatever you want to call him. I completely agree. His Wonder Woman, when I talked about John Byrne earlier and his Man of Steel after post-crisis, that's what George Perez did with Wonder Woman. He took Wonder Woman in 1986 after
Crisis.
He's the
one who made Wonder Woman, this beautiful Amazonian woman, and the way he drew her was absolutely fantastic.
And he wrote that series, too, which tells you how fucking good he is. And that's like a critically acclaimed series. He wrote it and drew it, and it's fucking fantastic. Crisis speaks for itself. The guy that drew Crisis is probably the best.
The guy who drew Crisis on Infinite Earths and the Infinity Gauntlet series definitely deserves the throne.
Yes. Those are the two biggest events in superhero history.
And a lot of people don't know this, but he drew and co-wrote and did co-writing on the Justice League of America and the Avengers crossover in the early 2000s and the late 90s. The Marvel DC crossover. George Perez drew it.
Yeah, he was the only reason that thing happened, too, because I think it was Shooter was still running the place. Jim Shooter was running Marvel, and I forgot who was running DC. And they were, like, having, like, intense battles on creative control and stuff. And Perez was like, hold on, like, we got this. And he, like, made that whole deal happen. He also did I don't know if he wrote it, but I know – no, he didn't write it. But he for sure drew the new Teen Titans with Wolfman.
Yeah, he did.
Which brings us Beast Boy and Cyborg. Yep.
The man who's won several awards for every comic book and illustrating award you can receive. He's won several of them.
Yeah. He truly is one of the greatest at his craft.
It's a shame that he died at a young, ripe age of 67. And he's definitely the GOAT and the king of comic book illustration.
Yes, he is. All right, my number one. We touched on him earlier a little bit. I didn't say much. I went with Jim Lee because for my number one, I wanted to go with the comics that I enjoy looking at the most. And that is Jim Lee. He's got the most – what a comic book should look like is Jim Lee's art. He can make everything look good. He's got his – like that commercial style. It looks like how art should be. And like everyone nowadays try to mimic it and make it kind of like that because his art's just so good. He made the fucking X-Men into what they were
again in the early 90s to late 90s. His X-Men run on the Uncanny X-Men is one of the best drawn pieces of superhero content anybody will ever see. And they're not my favorite group. But he drew the X-Men like nobody's business. And then he left, went to Image with Todd McFarlane and those people, and he made his own Wildstorm imprint, which was very huge. And you had the Authority and Wildcat, Stormwatch, which not a lot of, like, hardcore comic book fans are real fans of these before they got bought by DC. And then you start that relationship, and then you get them to fucking draw Hush, one of the most influential stories of the 2000s. He draws Hush, which that book looks fucking phenomenally beautiful. I love that book. The artwork in that book is nuts. His shit on Detective, he's probably the busiest artist in comic books. He does everything. He works on everything. And now he's basically running the show there at DC and helping them with a bunch. And what I said earlier about how a shitty art with a good story can't work, but a bad story with great art can work, look no other than Batman and Robin All-Star, The Boy Wonder, or whatever the fuck it's called, with Frank Miller, right? Because that was like when Frank Miller was like ass. He was done, and he was not drawing, or he was not writing as good as he used to, and his Batman was just kind of a violent piece of shit who was feeding Robin rats and fucking Black Canary in front of burning corpses and shit. But Jim Lee drawing that stuff, it looked beautiful. It was the most beautiful dead corpse you've ever seen in your life. And Black Canary's ass looked great. So he's just his art is so fundamental, and he took Neil Adams' style and just kept kind of building on it. And he's one of those guys that you can go up to, and he'll draw you something in 5 minutes, and it looks like the best piece of art you've ever seen in your life. So this guy just really, he owns it, and he's legit, and that's my number one.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Pip, that's our list.
That is our list.
That's our fucking list, dude.
All right, you ready for my idea for next week's episode?
Sure.
You ready for it?
No, not really.
I don't think you are.
I'm not.
I am.
Janice.
Next week, I am suggesting that our next episode is top 10 comic book movie directors and screenwriters.
Okay. I'm down.
We can rank more people. Fucking. So are we doing writers or director, or you want to do both?
I kind of want to do both in together because Zack Snyder, for instance, he's a director, but he wrote a lot of movies as well, and he partially writes parts of a lot of other movies that he doesn't direct.
Well, let's call the list filmmakers, because that's technically both. Top 10 superhero movie filmmakers.
That's a better way to do it. Top 10 comic book filmmakers.
Okay, yeah, that works. All right, yeah, I'm down. There's so many good ones. And I know you and me are probably going to be having way different lists. Well, maybe a couple similar ones.
No, definitely. We're definitely going to have some similar ones. The only person I want to exclude is Kevin Feige, because he is not a filmmaker. He writes the storyboards and the universe boards, but he doesn't direct or do the film shit.
Okay. We can exclude Feige. I'm fine with that, because he could be number one if we did include him, so.
Yeah, I don't want to include him because he's not on set of the movies. He's in Marvel Studios writing shit on a brainstorm board. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's just, oh, they should do this. Let's do it. He's
I
us.
Want to keep him, I want to stick to people who are actually on the scenes, on the set of these movies.
Yeah, let's do it.
Directors, co-writers, EPs, shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
no, we can't put Zack Snyder in every single slot for the Snyder bots listening out.
No, I'm not going to be doing that. The man will definitely be mentioned, I'm assuming, by both sides. But
yeah, I'm sure he'll be on both lists.
But yeah, we're not going to do no bots or nothing. We're not going to get too crazy.
That sounds exciting. I'm ready for it. And you got anything else, Bob, or are you ready to fucking hit the bottle and get the hell out of here?
I believe we have more She-Hulk, so we'll have another She-Hulk episode review. I'm pretty sure DC League of Super Pets is on HBO Max, so we can do a review of that next week on top of House of the Dragon.
All right.
With that being said, we'll see everybody next week. Babo, keep doing your thing. And, yeah, we'll see everybody next week.
Yeah. All right. Have a good night, motherfucker.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks,